and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. You can live your life detached from reality, but doing so is very dangerous. Reality doesn't have emotions and feelings. There's a cold logic to reality. The recent Munich Security Conference was a display of being detached from reality. The Europeans want more war. They're in the process of succeeding. Crosstalking the Munich Security Conference, I'm joined by my guest, Marco Gasic, in London. He is an international affairs commentator. In Milan, we have Richard Warner. He is a professor of finance and economics. And in Germany, we cross to Konstantin von Hofmeister. He is the author of Esoteric Trumpism and Multipolarity, as well as founder of Multipolar Press. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Marco, if I can go to you first here, I'm loath to do it, but I will. I'm going to quote a Politico title of one of their articles. I can't believe I'm doing this. I just loathe Politico. But here's the title: Munich 2026 Awards. Kaya Kallas, poker face. Lindsey Graham, cursing, and Mark Rutte talking to a dog. Well, that's one interpretation of what happened there. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are it's still the one direction that they came in on, and that's the one they want to continue on. It's a one where Russia is specified as the enemy, because if you don't have an external enemy, then you have a problem of internal cohesion, especially if you're the EU. You don't know how to organize your society with its consent. You need a bogeyman, and that bogeyman needs to look dangerous, and that's really what it's about, presenting Russia as the threat against which society needs to organize in a very undemocratic and dictatorial fashion. That's, yeah, for me, the aim and the game that they're playing and will continue to play from on the basis of their announcements.
Yeah, Richard, they're always talking about at these security conferences and meetings, the endless meetings these people have about unity. But the more they talk about unity, the more we see that there is the United States is going one way and the Europeans are going another way. And even within the Europeans, there are different directions here. It was a spectacle. It was more of a, you know, it looked like a Turning Point USA to me. I mean, and then, of course, you had clowns like Kaya Kallas and, of course, Zelensky on display here. I mean, it was a pretty pathetic performance in my mind. Richard.
Yes, I think it was a performance. And now that you mentioned TPUSA and the recent performance we've seen there, I would agree. And at the same time, it's astonishing. It's just always astonishing. And it, yes, predictable in many ways. We shouldn't be astonished, but it is astonishing that what used to be years ago,
yeah,
an event that was actually closer to the name about security and maintaining security and peace and making efforts, and even in the old days, reaching out and inviting President Putin to give a speech, you know, there used to be that old approach. Now it's very clearly Russia bashing and warmongering. But they've added a further surprising dimension that I didn't expect. Hey, let's introduce colonialism again, neocolonialism. Colonialism wasn't that bad. So, wow, they managed to add to that. So it's overall quite an astonishing spectacle.
Well, I mean, Richard, if I can say with you, you're obviously referring to Marco Rubio's 20-minute speech. What I found even more remarkable than praising colonialism is that there were members of the crowd that actually stood up and clapped. I mean, that was even more astonishing. I mean, Marco Rubio had a lot of things going on there. He's running for president in 2028, and he's trying to distinguish himself. But if I can go to Konstantin here, distinguishing yourself being, you know, wasn't so bad during colonialism. You can make the claim that the two world wars in Europe were a process of decolonialization within Europe and the world. But Marco Rubio started in 1945. He's not particularly concerned what happened before 1945. Go ahead, Konstantin.
Well, I think it was quite astonishing, and I think what Marco Rubio was trying to do, he was desperately trying to pretend that the unipolar moment when West was the global hegemon had not ended, and somehow it is still continuing, which is obviously not the case, because now we live in a multipolar world. And especially Western Europe is losing relevance by the day and geopolitical clout as well. I think the United States, of course, is still a powerful player and an actual pole in the multipolar world. But of course, it needs support. And I think J.D. Vance was sort of like the bad cop routine last year. And Marco Rubio is like the good cop. And he tried to like pretend that Europeans, Americans, they're civilizational brethren, they're brothers, and we're in it together because, and I think he even said that the United States is Europe's child. And he said that the Western civilization achieved so much, like inventions and explorers, and it was somehow ruined by the Soviet Union and communism, thereby implicitly blaming Russia again, and also by the anti-colonial movements, which were sort of instigated again by the Soviet Union, again blaming Russia. So, I mean, I think his speech, even though he didn't mention the conflict in Ukraine in great detail, or basically not at all, I think it fit the theme very well, which was basically Russia bashing the entire conference.
Yeah, I mean, Marco, I guess all of us here are astonished by Marco Rubio's speech here. But it's even more astonishing. So according to Marco Rubio, colonialism was actually a good thing. It was one of the good things the West came up with. Not like freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. Those are Western civilizational ideas. How they were expressed around the world is a very, very different thing. And what I find astounding is that the Europeans are not sitting at the table when it comes to colonialism. They're on the menu for the Americans. Marco.
Well, yeah, it's certainly an indicator of which direction the US wants to go. And it doesn't, as he said, want to be a polite caretaker to the managed decline of the West, which means basically it will not accept the rest on equal terms. Multipolarity here, it's all about a victory. It's about actually maintaining global primacy, whatever you have to do it. And colonialism may have been a dirty word yesterday, but today it's a very useful policy. If you want to grab as much land and as much critical minerals and resources on the planet as you can in order to maintain your dominance, then you have to forget things like what they call the rules-based order, or before they used to call international law. It's really open season as far as he's concerned, because they do not want to see, or him and his the Washington does not want to see the decline of the US into number two, number three, or anything else. It's all about superiority. And the Europeans, in a sense, now slightly on the menu, were perfectly happy with American dominance of others. When it comes closer to home, they find it quite difficult to manage to understand how the rest of the world felt when it was being bombed in Iraq and Yugoslavia and Libya and elsewhere. So really, I weep crocodile tears for the Europeans. Really, they deserve what they're getting.
Yeah, well, Richard, they liked it when they were on the winning side of the rules-based order and all this other nonsense here. But when they are subject to it, like the Global South, they're very uncomfortable with it. Europe is not supposed to be treated this way. We're not the Global South, but that's exactly the position that they have put themselves in, quite willingly, with their eyes wide open. Richard.
Yes, indeed. And I think this gap of the reality that Europe is, the policies that have been adopted in Europe are hurting Europe, and how to sell that to the public and realign that with any sort of standard framework is a challenge. And I think the reason, and that this is really what's missing, certainly in the speeches in Munich, but usually in these discussions, is the realization of who's really in charge. Now, they told us earlier, already decades ago, in these type of international events at the World Economic Forum, nations don't matter, you know, it's all beyond nations and so on. And the idea was that businesses take over. But businesses are owned by shareholders. So who are these shareholders? Well, many are cutouts owned by the CIA. Europe was created by the CIA. And what we see is the CIA in charge of Europe, and that explains many of these contradictions. Because, of course, the CIA doesn't run Europe for the benefit of Europeans. That is precisely why Europe is ruining itself. It's because Europeans are not in charge. Europeans wouldn't do this if they weren't actually stooges for external control. Now, that battle, I think, to some extent also exists in the U.S. because President Trump, at least initially, was really going after certain CIA excesses and at least said he would go against the deep state. And so in many ways, the CIA, which is not supposed to be active in America, but is, I think in many ways has sort of retreated to where it's legally safe, which is, for example, Germany, which is an occupied country, and the U.S. Still has the occupation rights, which it used and abused by the CIA. So all its activities are legal by definition in Germany. And that's how the CIA has a strong power base. And of course, there's Brussels and the dictatorship that the CIA created. You know, the all the founding fathers we know from disclosures, declassified documents, Jean Monnet, Schumann Spark, they're all CIA agents paid by the CIA, the European movement created by the CIA, the European youth movement 100% funded by the CIA, is all a matter of public record. And so then they created this dictatorship because the, you know, they have a parliament, but it's a show, as we know, it's a sham. Parliament has no right to actually write any laws, propose any laws. It's all written by the European Commission, the classic Soviet Union era setup. Yes. So they mentioned the Soviet Union. Well, that is the model of the EU.
I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. But I must say, gentlemen, we can discuss it in the second half of the program. It was pleasant not to hear about democracy all the time since they don't practice it themselves. Okay, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue more discussion on the Munich Security Conference. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the Munich Security Conference. Okay, let's go back to Constantine in Germany. I guess another way you can look at it is that the, you know, Marco Rubio and the other members of the Trump administration that represented the United States, and I think, Constantine, you've already said it on this program, it looks like there's a rebranding of hegemony going on here. And it's hearkening back to a kind of a 19th century paradigm of great power politics. I would like to point out that great power politics, you're supposed to stay away from getting into a conflict with the other great powers. Periphery is always free to meddle in, but you know, going direct toe to toe is not what you're supposed to do because you could lose, and then your empire fails. But the Europeans, at the other time, are keeping what they believe the rules-based order, which was always a complete illusion. They want to keep that on life support. There's no substance to that. So this rebranding, the Europeans automatically, by default, lose. They just don't. They're just out of touch with reality. Like I said in my introduction, Constantine.
Well, you're absolutely right. The Europeans are definitely out of touch. They think they still matter when it is very clear that they don't. Like, for example, right now, you have the negotiations going on in Geneva between three parties. It's Russian Federation, the United States, and Ukraine. The Europeans are completely absent. And just a few hours ago, it was on the news that the Russian delegation was about to arrive in Geneva. But the German government did not give the Russian plane permission to fly over German territory. So it had to fly around via Italy to Geneva. I mean, that tells us that the Europeans do not want peace at all. And they are not part of the peace negotiations precisely because they're against a negotiated settlement. And I think the American side knows it very well, and that's why the Europeans were not invited, because usually the Europeans, they sabotage all these peace talks. And I think another sign is when Macron said that he wants to start talks with the Kremlin again, or, I mean, direct talks between France and Russia. I think it's a sign that basically the Europeans don't want to be left out. They feel they're being left out because they're not part of the official process. So they're trying to find other means to try to somehow get into the game, when it is quite clear that the Russians want to escalate as much as possible, as was evident at the Munich Security Conference in the discussions, when several people said that the red lines should be crossed right now, and yeah. Ukraine should be supported with Tomahawk missiles and other long-range weapons that are able to strike deep into Russian territory.
But Constant, you're absolutely right. I think you, I'm not sure what kind, Russia doesn't want to escalate. I think the Europeans want to escalate with these Tomahawks. Marco, you know, we also have the German Chancellor Merz. He's talking about he wants to create the largest standing army in Europe. Well, we've been there before. But Europe doesn't collectively doesn't have the capacity to develop a military-industrial complex. At least it would take a decade or even longer for to be integrated and to be meaningful. And this is something that Europeans can't afford, but they need the boogeyman, as you pointed out. I mean, what is this security security conference when you say we must build armies and we have to have infrastructure, when it's the whole point of it is security? And on top of that, why wasn't Russia involved if you're interested in security? This is antithetical to security, Marco.
You're right. It's nothing to do, Peter, with security, because security presupposes or implies the fact that all the parties don't feel like making war. This seemed like a gathering where people would stridently, prime ministers and chancellors would stridently call for a war that was inevitable. And in the run-up to the Munich conference, all the lackeys in the system were talking about the inevitability of that war. So Europe is really, it's quite amazing. They're talking in generational terms. So they want generations of their populations to be paying through the nose when they're already suffering from previous mistakes made by these same governments for a security that would be available if they were only prepared to accept, A, that they got it wrong by trying to force Russia to accept a Ukrainian knife at its throat before this whole thing kicked off. And now that the only way out of this is to give security, as we said at the start, to everybody. Otherwise, there's no security for anybody. And that has to be Russia included. And if they did that, if they actually behaved like human beings instead of like robots determined on war, they would realize that by coming to some proper agreement with Russia, there's your security, there's the end of the problem. But no, they want to keep the problem going because they have reasons, societal reasons, for wanting the external bogeyman, and that seems to be what they're determined on doing. But the price is lack of security, lack of safety, imminence of some conflagration further down the line as far as they're concerned. And that's bad for everybody, including for them and their own population.
Yeah, because, Richard, they're still in the back of the mind of these Europeans that were at the conference. They still have in the back of the mind that the United States is going to swoop in and save the day for them, okay? It's just you have to get rid of Trump and everything will go back to the way it was. The world is changing very, very quickly. Even after Trump, this rift is going to continue because it's unnatural. It is not natural for Europe's security. It's not natural for American security, not for the Russians, et cetera, et cetera. The system has come, it no longer functions, if it ever did. Instead of talking about preparing for new armies and technology, they should be sitting down and having a talk, a serious talk about new security architecture. But they can't go there. That is, they just cannot go there. That is the only way for all of us to survive this, is to go for a collective security arrangement. Richard.
Yes, the reason why they can't go there, is because, this is my earlier point, who are these Europeans? The Europeans want war. The Europeans are not willing to have peace. These are 100% CIA stooges. They work for the CIA. Merz is the German chancellor, is a BlackRock man. That's the financial secret service complex. And then we have people who are literally, you know, were recruited by the CIA. The CIA runs the show. So we have to really say the CIA doesn't want peace. And that's not a surprise, is it? And then you also understand this otherwise strange behavior. They behave you know, Peter, as you were just saying, as if America will swoop in. Well, that's how the CIA thinks. This is, these are all CIA scripts. And yes, as look, you know, as soon as Trump is away, the CIA will be back to its old glory and will be able to, you know, get the hawks in and make war on Russia full, you know, full blown head on war. That's the CIA script. So that's what we're hearing. It's really the CIA Munich conference that we heard. and that explains this. Now, the Europeans, the European people, I believe the vast majority wants peace with Russia, wants friendship with Russia, and is actually quite friendly towards Russia. It's this secret service complex that, of course, also controls the media that gives this anti-Russian impression. That's not really what Europeans think. You know, this is what's imposed on us. And that's also the problem we have. And so when we talk about solutions, you know, how do we get out of this? What are solutions? Actually, Europeans need to stand up. We are still run like a colony. And of course, they're making it increasingly explicit. Because since 45, European countries have been occupied. Germany formally and legally until this day. Others formally are sovereign. But then the CIA created this EU structure to, for them to lose their sovereignty and again be run by the CIA. So what we now need desperately is for Europeans to say, these guys in Brussels don't represent us. And, you know, the EU is the political arm of NATO, which is, you know, the military US industrial secret service complex. We need to get rid of that. We want true European views to be represented, and that is obviously to make peace with other European countries such as Russia.
You know, Constantine, you know, we look at the, I'm glad that Richard mentioned the media here, because this is an elite project, and the elite media propagates this project, particularly when it comes to Russia and Ukraine. But you're in Germany right now. I mean, is everybody getting ready to sign up and go fight in the fields of Ukraine? Because, you know, I'm constantly watching this, but I never see what people, actual people, have to say about this. They're not really given a voice. Constantine.
Well, according to the mainstream media in Germany, yes. Like, if you listen to the radio, if you watch a mainstream TV, and even if you walk through, like, I know, train stations in Germany, you see the recruitment posters for the Bundeswehr with, like, happy young people holding rifles ready to go to war and defend the European way of life, as it says. Among the European populace, I think it's a half-half. Like, some people actually believe, I would say, that it is necessary to fight Russia, to defend Europe. But I think it is not really their fault, because they've been brainwashed, I mean, for years and years with relentless propaganda, and that's pretty much all they know. Because most people, I would say the majority, do not really have access to or are interested in reading alternative news sites, so they just basically swallow what the mainstream tells them. Of course, you also have educated people, people who actually inform themselves about what's really going on, and I think they are still a minority, but they're becoming more and more vocal, especially on social media like X, where you have like a person like Kalas, for example, posting something, and it's got like a minimal number of likes and thousands of negative comments from irate and angry Europeans. And rightfully so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kaya Kallas, she's like a stand-up comedian that can't read the room. Constantine, I'll stay with you. We only have about 40 seconds left here. What is the way out here? Because this is like, you know, the Europeans, it's so obvious that this is not in their security interests, their economic interests, their even, you know, the next generation. What are they their prospects, fighting an endless war here? I mean, what is the way out here? Because there's enough of us around that know this is leading in the wrong direction. What is the off ramp?
Well, I think there are only two off ramps. The first off ramp is the obvious one. The war has to end. The second off-ramp is if the alternative political parties, which are gaining in strength in different European powers, actually gain more influence and leverage, and thereby influence not just public perception, but also actual policy.
If Ukraine is going to be forever funded, it is at the expense of the average European. I can't see how that can be tolerated.
I think we need to exit from the CIA control. Sorry to butt in, but You know, that's the solution. Otherwise, okay, nothing is going to change.
All right. We're not going to solve all the problems here today, gentlemen, but I really appreciate the good banter here. I want to thank my guests in London, Milan, and in Germany. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.